care, and new services that connect even the most remote communities in northern New England with the ever-changing, ever-expanding global community. Fairpoint Communications. A connected community is a better community. Learn more at fairpointconnects.com.
Equal Time. Vermont issues, Vermont voices. Equal Time with Anthony Polina and you.
You poisoned my sweet water. You cut down my green trees. The food you fed my children was the cause of their disease. My world is slowly falling down, and the air's not good to breathe. And those of us who care enough, we have to do something. What you gonna do about me?
Good afternoon. Welcome to Equal Time. I'm Anthony Polina. I appreciate you being here. Also appreciate you giving us a call if you'd ever like to do that during the program. The numbers are 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Also, Amy Schollenberger is here again today as well. How you doing?
Good. How are you today, Anthony?
So you're going to come around like pretty often these days?
I'm hoping.
I am going to go off into some other interesting adventures over the next couple of weeks, and Amy will be here in the luxurious boxes of WDEV, handling the program while I'm gone, and we'll stay in touch as much as possible during that time. So before we get into the guts of the program today, which will be partly, well, mostly talking about some good things that are going on with veterans in the state of Vermont, right?
Yep, a couple fun things that are happening and some services out there.
Which is a nice sort of refreshing change from what's been going on the federal and national level when it comes to veterans, which actually I just heard on the news again about the long waiting periods and the lack of care. I'm not even sure how accurate any of that stuff totally is at this point. I think that the VA has a pretty large chunk of work it tries to do, and not surprised it stumbles over itself sometimes, although this idea that they were like messing around with waiting lists to make them look shorter is a little scary. Anyway, we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. First, I just want to talk about the fact that our governor seems to be on something of a roll when it comes to bill signings these days. You know, granted, they are partly media opportunities, I suppose, but it's good to let people know what new laws are coming into place. And this morning, we were down at, we were right in Middlesex down the road here at Red Hen Bakery, which a lot of DEV listeners are well aware of, and the governor signed a minimum wage bill, which raises the minimum wage in Vermont relatively significantly. I'm not even sure it's enough, but does it over the course of a couple of years, gets us up to about, I think it's $10.50 by the year 2018, is that it?
That's right.
Now, given inflation and cost of living and all, $10.50 in 2018 ain't going to be what it is today, but it's certainly better than the federal, you know, they talk about this press conference about the federal minimum wage, which is still like $7-something. I mean, you go to work your 40 hours, make $7.50 or whatever, it is $7.80 bucks an hour. I mean, you come home and you're living in poverty even though you're working all day. It's really something. So states are making the effort to raise the minimum wage. You know, President Obama said he supported raising a minimum wage and didn't exactly sort of didn't see the Congress jump up and down and act on that too quickly. But states are doing it. Connecticut's done it. Vermont, a couple of other states in New England are looking at it. And I think the city of Seattle just did $15 an hour. So that's quite an increase. And so we'll see where we go. There was also some questions about whether or not this meant that the governor would support the renewed push for earned sick days next year in the legislature. And he actually said absolutely after he was asked, I guess, two or three or four times the question. He did say absolutely he would try and find a smart way to make it happen, which I guess is a smart answer. But one of the things I just want to mention is this idea that raising the minimum wage certainly is a direct benefit to folks who are working at low-wage jobs, without a doubt. But on the other hand, I think we have to see the increase in minimum wage as an economic development strategy, one that says that we're going to pump, I forget the number, but certainly tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year into the local economy. So not only will, you know, businesses will be paying higher wages, that's true, but on the other hand, Vermonters will have a lot more money in their pockets, and so they'll be able to spend more money at those local businesses that are paying better wages. So it's supposed to, like, what is the thing, like, raise all boats or something like that?
Rising tide floats all boats.
Thank you. I needed that. Anyway, I think that's an important piece to keep in mind. And then there was the earlier in the week, there was another bill signing that had to do with a proposal to let childcare workers organize. And you were there at that one, right?
Yeah, I got to go to that bill signing last week in Burlington. The governor signed the bill that allows the early educators the right to organize. There were a few early educators there at the signing, a few legislators that helped along the way, and it was a pretty exciting day. After a multi-year struggle, the providers were able to see that bill get enacted into law, and now they'll get to decide, do they want to have a union or not?
And then if they do, then they negotiate with the state over the, what we call them, subsidies. I don't know if that's always the correct word.
Yeah. So if you're a low-income family and you qualify for help with your child care, that money actually goes to the provider who provides the care. You get to pick who you want to send your child to, but then that's their payment for taking care of your child.
And so the provider gets a little better payment and parents get better access to child care.
That's right. That's the idea.
It's a good idea. But yeah. You're right. It took, what were you saying, like maybe, I want to say 4 years, 3 years?
Yeah, between 3 and 4 years they've been working on that bill. So it's been a long fight to get that right.
Perseverance. We don't have time to get into this, but the other thing that I wanted to mention, and last week you and I had talked about the cost of college and what that meant to Vermonters being such a steep cost. And interesting that these days, last couple of days, President Obama's been talking about wanting to help students refinance their loans, which, you know, it's better than nothing, but it's like I want them to have a discussion about not making people spend so much money in the first place. I mean, refinancing loans is nice, but hardly a solution to the high cost of college. Anyway, we're going to take a quick call from Ben in South Burlington, then we will be talking to Bob Wirtz, I believe.
Bob Wirtz, with the Therapy Dogs of Vermont.
We'll get to him in a minute. First, hi, Ben, how are you doing?
Can you hear me, or is there an echo?
Well, we hear you. It's a little bit of an echo, but it's good enough. It's fine.
Okay. I was calling to say I think the legislature didn't go far enough on raising the minimum wage. I think they should have raised it to the maximum amount they wanted to all at once. What I can see on the one hand, in fairness to small businesses, if you're a painter and hire somebody, that you might not, be able to pay a livable wage. And on the other hand, the thing that irks me is that companies like Walmart and McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all that, whose CEOs make billions of dollars or millions of dollars, don't pay a livable wage, and they have all kinds of ways of skirting around it.
Yeah.
And what else I was going to say was I agree with you on the economic development issue and the minimum wage, and they should have raised it all the way. I think they should raise it to $15 an hour, like the Fight for 15 campaign, which I'm sure you've heard about, Anthony, McDonald's and Walmart and Burger King and stuff. Anyways, I also want to make a comment that I think our veterans need a lot more help in many ways, and I think it's a disgrace that we don't treat our veterans well. If we raised the minimum wage to a livable wage, then that would be helping our veterans in one way, too, if you raised the minimum wage to $15 in Vermont. So I think veterans deserve a lot more help, and it's a disgrace as a country that we don't help them as much as we should.
You're right.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot, Ben. I appreciate it. I hear what you're saying about the minimum wage as well.
So thanks, Ben, for those comments. They were insightful for sure. And I do agree with you on the veterans. We should treat our veterans with a lot more respect. So we have on the line Bob Ertz, who's the executive director of Therapy Dogs of Vermont. And Therapy Dogs of Vermont brings dogs to bring joy, companionship, wellness, and magical moments to people in various different situations where they might need a little bit of stress relief. So, Bob, are you on the line there?
Yes, Amy, I am. And so nice to be on your show, and nice to be talking with you too, Anthony.
Appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for joining us, Bob. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about what Therapy Dogs does, and also a little bit about your new initiative with veterans?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Therapy Dogs as an organization actually started back in 1990 with a gentleman named Steve Ryman and his two German Shepherds making a visit to the pediatric unit at Fletcher Allen. And from that beginning, with one handler and two dogs, we've now grown into an organization with approximately 300 teams, handlers and dogs, making visits to about 140 different locations across Vermont, as well as in New York and New Hampshire and also Quebec. So we're out there making these visits to, as you said, Amy, folks that could use some support, and that's what our efforts are all about, touching hearts, bringing joy.
So you don't just go to hospitals then? I was under this impression that it was mostly visiting people at 300 or 150 locations. It's clearly not just hospitals.
Well, Anthony, it started out with hospitals, and we are at many hospitals, but it also includes nursing homes and retirement communities, libraries and schools. We have a big program with our universities during exam time and high stress time, where we go in with our teams. And also, most recently, as Amy mentioned, in terms of working with veterans. And you know, we're very excited, as I said, now the organization started in 1990, you know, we're approaching surpassing our third decade, or moving into our third decade. So our third decade initiative for the organization was based on a belief that we had a role in to play in assisting veterans. And we're reestablishing a stronger presence at the VA Medical Center in White River Junction. And we're also reaching out to the different VA clinics across Vermont. And in case your listeners don't know, we have five of these VA clinics in Burlington, in Bennington, in Brattleboro, Newport, and Rutland. And as I said, our hope is to have a regular and ongoing presence at these clinics as well as at the medical center.
So, Bob, you just won the Vermont State Employees Credit Union We Care 2 program grant. Talk about what you're going to do with the $10,000 that you got from the credit union.
Well, we're very excited to have won that activity, and our hope now is to be able to expand our efforts across the entire state of Vermont. We have members and teams that are in the southern and northwestern part of the state, but we're making a real effort to increase those numbers. So we're setting out with an ambitious plan to actually go to those communities to do our testing and our training in order to increase the numbers, so that we can meet the demand. Part of our challenge is we're still receiving more requests than we can meet. And in order to make inroads there, we're expanding our efforts with these growth hubs.
So if I have a dog and I think the dog might be a good dog to participate with me and for us to be a team for Therapy Dogs, how might I go about doing that.
Well, and can I just throw in there, like, how long might it take for me to get trained? Yeah. Never mind the dog.
Right.
Well, it's, and that's a, I'm glad you asked the question that way, Anthony, because I think many times people think when you say therapy dogs, it's about just about the dog. But we've really institutionalized the terminology of certified therapy dog team, which basically reminds people that it's both the handler and the dog. But as far as the training goes, we have a 2-hour training course that people can take, as well as they can go right to the test. And one of the nice things about Steve Ryman, the founder of the organization, was when he set this organization up, he made sure all of the information about the organization was listed online. So the first, to Amy's point, the first thing you would do is go to www.therapydogs.org. And what you'll find there basically is all sorts of information on what it takes to become a therapy dog team, you know, the process. And for some folks, Anthony, they have a great dog. The dog has the right temperament and the right skills, and they can walk in and take the test, pass the test, and then they go through a process of 3 evaluations at one of our testing facilities where the handler and the dog together learn the ropes of what these visits are like. And if the team successfully passes those 3 evaluations, then they're basically allowed to make visits wherever they would be welcomed. We don't direct our members where to go once they've become certified, but we do provide them with ongoing announcements of opportunities in their region and outside the region as well.
Bob, we're getting a call from Eudora in Montpelier. Eudora, do you have a question?
No, I just want to tell you about Paul and Sadie. Paul delivered my senior meal, and he brought Sadie. She walked into the living room, then she walked into the bedroom, and she came back out. And she is so wonderful. Nobody has to train her. And then he didn't bring her. And I had a box number 4. He says, you want me to take care of that? I said, it's too heavy. And he lifted that and put that in the living room. He is so kind. That dog was so wonderful. I don't know his last name. He delivers meals, you know, for the senior center. But that's a good qualification for a dog to be. One, she's wonderful. You guys take care.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Eudora.
I guess, you know, Bob what is it about dogs? I mean, you know, Amy mentioned before you came on about, and I love dogs, don't get me wrong. I've fostered dogs, and our family's taken care of a lot of dogs. And, you know, Amy talked about how it's sort of a magical experience sometimes. I mean, you've been doing this. I mean, what is it about dogs that does people good?
I wish I could fully answer that question, Anthony, but I can tell you that they've got, whatever it is, they've got it. And more research is validating what many of us as dog owners have known for an awfully long time, which is the powerful connectedness that a dog brings to a human being, whether it's the owner or even someone that they go to visit. And that's what's so wonderful about this organization as well. You're working with all these folks that have dogs, so they're already dog people, and then they love their dogs enough that they want to share their dogs with perfect strangers. It is powerful stuff. And as I talk to our members, each one of them has a whole list of stories, a whole list of situations they've been in with their dog making these visits that have been ultimately more powerful than they could have imagined. So, yeah, I don't know what it is, but there is definitely that canine human connection.
So, Bob, do you have any events coming up where you know there will be dogs available, or do you know of any specific things that you're doing with the dogs coming up in June, July?
Yeah, Amy, thank you for asking that question. We are now located in four or five different locations for both the clinics, the training, as well as the testing. We're in Williston, we're in Manchester, we're in the Northeast Kingdom, we're in Randolph, and I hope with securing some additional funding, we'll be in Woodstock and White River Junction later this year. But the entire schedule for our clinics and for the testing and training is listed on the website, and I've got too many to list on air, but all of the information can be found at www.therapiedogs.org.
You know, I just want to mention before we let you go that I was talking to my mother last night, and a number of years ago, probably 4 years ago now, she was in the hospital, Fletcher Allen, had some surgery, and of course after surgery you're kind of knocked out, I guess is the way to put it generally. And, you know, for a couple of days, it was pretty major surgery. And she always says that one of the main things that she remembers from being in the hospital was at one point she kind of, you know, sort of woke up, I guess, and there was this guy in her room with a dog, you know. And it was a therapy dog, and he sort of came by to say hello to her, and he was really on his way somewhere down the hall, I guess. But it's interesting that she remembers that more than just about anything else from the experience. She goes, she said, why do I always remember that dog coming into the room? But, you know, it's one of those magical moments.
And it brings joy.
It's true.
Definitely does. And I'll just add for listeners out there, if you need a little bit of moment of therapy for yourself, therapydogs.org also has a lot of really great photographs of dogs and their team members providing services across the state. So if you just want to look at some great photos of some cute dogs and their team members, you can check out that website.
Bob, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you taking the time.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you both.
Well, keep up the good work. Appreciate it. Well, we can now bring on Dana.
So is Dana, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Well, Dana Lesperance is the assistant director of the Community High School of Vermont, and you're going to talk to us about the Harley Time program. Tell us what that is.
Well, Harley Time program is a program that the Community High School of Vermont has operated for 7 years now, and it's a program where we take students of the Community High School of Vermont who are also offenders in the Vermont Department of Corrections. And during the winter, we partner with Green Mountain Harley-Davidson and teach the students motorcycle mechanics, employability skills, social skills through the Habits of Mind. And this is all done while they rebuild an old Harley that would be destined for the junkyard. And we customize the bike and bring it to sound mechanical ability and donate it to a community organization for them to raffle and raise money for their organization.
So, I just want to back up a second. Do they, like, is it a group that works on one bike, or are they working on different bikes? Just, you know, sort of, what's this? How does it sort of fit together?
Yeah, it's this is done through a grant with the Department of Labor. So, Community High School receives the grant funds, and we get the motorcycle from Green Mountain Harley. Then the grant funds are used to pay for the instructor instruction, and it typically is, we try one group of students, but oftentimes our students are moving around due to their sentence structure or whatever they're working through in corrections. So quite often it ends up being 20 or so students, with maybe five of those students able to work on the project from beginning to end.
So this year the bike that you all built is going to the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. How did you pick that group? How do you pick your groups?
When the program started, myself and the instructors and folks from Green Mountain Harley used to choose the organization. But as the program has matured and really molded into a much better program, the students now choose the organization. So this year, when we spoke with the students at the Northwest State Correctional Facility, they were really moved by the work we did last year with the Gold Star families. The two motorcycles went to the Gold Star families to continue their work in remembering the 42 soldiers who passed. And the students said it felt really good working with the families who have lost a soldier. How about we do something this year for the soldiers who are still in Vermont and working through difficulties that come about due to combat operations or being in the military? And we worked with 26-2 of the combat vets last year, and we did again this year with the money this year going to the Veterans Place in Northfield.
So last year you did the Gold Star program, and I think the bikes were custom made. They had gold stars on them?
Yes. Yeah. We used the actual gold star that is on the license plate. Each side of the tank has the gold star from the license plate, and then each bike also had 42 smaller individual stars to represent each soldier who has passed.
And so just to get a little bit more about the program that is at the community high school, you said the folks in the program are offenders. How do they get into the community high school? How do they get picked for this particular program, the Harley Time program?
Community high school, we enroll anyone under the custody of corrections who wants to work towards their high school diploma. If they've received a high school diploma, they might want to increase their academic or vocational skills or earn industry certification to better their chances of being employed. So we're open to anybody within corrections who chooses to come to education. And we don't really choose the students to participate in Harley Time. They really choose us, and of course they have to be living at the Northwest State Correctional Facility. But it's students who are interested in the mechanics field, interested in, you know, receiving education towards workforce development. And if they're working at the auto shop, then they're part of Harley Time also.
So is it fair to say that they generally have some, you know, experience or, you know, mechanical ability? I'm just wondering, you know, if I were to be there and had sort of no particular previous experience with automobiles or motorcycles, would I still be able to perhaps participate in the program?
Yep. Our programs are really geared towards meeting the students where they're at. So if somebody came to us, which they often do, with no experience whatsoever, they spend a lot of time in theory and some time on hands-on. And if somebody comes to us and they've been an auto mechanic or they know about motorcycles, then they may move directly to hands-on. And we have some students who have a lot of experience in the field, and they become mentors in helping the younger students learn the field of auto mechanics.
I'm wondering if this is also how unique this program is or isn't. I mean, it sounds like a really cool idea, and I just want you. I guess I'll just ask whether this is something unique to Vermont, or, you know, kind of how'd you come up with this, I guess, is my question.
I think community high school is very unique. That, you know, we're one of the few accredited high schools within the Department of Corrections in the country,
really?
But possibly the only.
I didn't realize that.
And for Harley Time, I think it's common for corrections departments to partner with community organizations and businesses for workforce development. I would say in my research, what's unique here is the willingness of Green Mountain Harley to offer up their technicians. We've done mock interviews. Their managers have come into the facilities and done mock interviews. So it's not only learning for our students, but it's also learning for the managers at Green Mountain Harley.
Looks like we're getting a call from Xenia in Barrytown. Xenia, are you there?
I am. My question is just, is this opportunity for male inmates only, or is it available to women also?
Good question.
The program is available to women this past year due to funding. We didn't have a technician at the Chittenden Correctional Facility, but in the past, we did have a technician that would go in and do hands-on work. And when the women were at the Northwest State Facility, they did work on Harleys. In fact, one of the Gold Star bikes, they started that project. And then when the males moved there, they finished the project.
Thanks, Eddie. I appreciate it.
So I think we need to take a little break. And
got to wake Jack up. Wait a second.
Jack's sleeping. There we are. Dana, thank you so much for talking to us about the program. And we're going to talk to a person who participated in the program, I think, when we get back from our break.
Andy Johnson, right?
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it, Dana.
802cars.com represents the top three selling brands in Vermont, just off exit 7 of I-89. 802 Toyota sells Vermont's number one brand. Twin City Subaru sells Vermont's unofficial state car. 802 Honda sells Vermont's number three brand. This is Dave Birmingham, chief cook and dog walker. When you come to any of our dealerships, you'll be able to find the vehicle you want at the price you want. 802cars.com offers what no other dealer can. One-stop shopping for Vermont's top three brands, all just off the interstate. We'll help you find the right vehicle that fits your budget. Don't forget, we're the largest seller of certified used cars in Vermont because we all know the best new cars make the best used cars too. So click on 802cars.com for information on all our great products. Call 229-9117 and speak to one of our low-key product specialists. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're just a minute off the interstate. 802 Toyota, Twin City Subaru, and 802 Honda. Driving to be Vermont's number one auto solution.
So at Any River Kids, we love summer camp. We love to see kids come in so excited to go learn new things and try new things and go have an adventure for a week. And we have all the stuff they need to go on that one-week adventure. You know, if your kids are headed to sports camp, which so many kids are, we now carry real, genuine sneakers from Saucony. So they're made just like adult sneakers for soccer camp and tennis camp and camps where your kid has to run. They come in fun colors, which is very important. They, you know, they have all those bright neon colors that are really in right now. At Any River Kids, we really like to make it easy for families to send their kids off to camp. We have great kids' sleeping bags from Kelty and Mountain Smith, and they're great for overnight camp because then you don't have to bring, like, sheets and blankets and the whole nine. It's like, just roll it up in a ball, and they pack really small and stuff it in their backpack and send them off. So stop by and see us. We're on Langdon Street in Montpelier. Come down to Any River Kids and get ready for summer camp with us.
Lamoille Valley Ford Gas Card is back. As summer gas prices peak, we're excited to announce in June the return of the Lamoille Valley Ford Gas Card. Folks, listen to this. Right now, when you purchase or lease any new car, van, or SUV in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford, you'll get a $1,000 gas card or additional discount of equal value, and this is on top of already huge Ford rebates and before you get top dollar for your trade-in. And we're going to double your gas card savings to $2,000 on any new truck in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford. And right now our lot is overflowing with a record level of new Ford trucks. Plus, for the first time ever, we're extending this offer to you on our already aggressively priced huge used vehicle inventory. That's right, at Lamoille Valley Ford, get a $1,000 gas card on any used car, van, or SUV in stock, and we'll double the gas card savings to $2,000 on any used truck. So drive from 14, 15, or 16 to Lamoille Valley Ford in Hardwick. Get a great deal and up to a $2,000 gas card only at Lamoille Valley Ford. And remember, at Lamoille Valley Ford, we know price matters.
Back to Equal Time. This is Amy Schallenberger, and I'm here with Anthony Polina, and we've been talking about the Harley Time program at the Community High School of Vermont. And we're hoping still to get in touch with Andy Johnson, who is a former participant in the Harley Time program, but right now we have Don Edwards, who's the chapter commander of the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. Welcome, Don.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
So first, just tell me what the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association does.
Well, actually, the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association is a nationwide organization. Each state has multiple chapters. In our state, we have three chapters. Our chapter is 26-2, and we're a nonprofit organization, and we raise funds to help veterans. and our hobby is to ride motorcycles. So it's a great way to get out and help out those vets that are down on their luck or running into problems with finances and stuff, that we can get out there and help them out.
You know, we should say, before we get into the detail of what you do, I think it's well known that a lot of veterans, we talked earlier in the program about how veterans sense deserve more, I guess, respect and support, I would call it, when they come back from combat particularly. We tend to talk about how wonderful it is that these folks are putting themselves on the line, and then they come home and we find that there are a lot of veterans in great need of support. So you find that to be the case in Vermont?
Oh, it's definitely the case. And I gotta give a lot of credit to this, to the Vietnam era vets, as they know what it's like to come back, you know, and not have a welcome. So they go above and beyond to make sure that those troops coming back are, know that there's someone back here to back them up.
So it sounds like you really have kind of a twofold mission. One is to, you know, share your hobby of riding motorcycles together, and the other is to raise money to help veterans who maybe need a little bit of support or assistance. Is that true?
That's exactly it.
So do you have events where folks ride their bikes together? How does that work?
Well, actually, there's a lot of different organizations that have motorcycle rides that they put on, and we also have ride. We have the Vermont the Fallen Family Ride. We have the Mueller Ride. Now, these are rides that raise funds to help the veterans and their veterans' families that have been killed in action.
So this year you got also the motorcycle from Harley Time, and you're raffling that off. Has the raffle already happened?
Yes, it is a great honor to receive this motorcycle. We did not know that we were going to receive this, and to have it come out as the Freedom Is Not Free bike, it's quite special. Someone's going to be very, very happy for a $50 ticket, I can tell you that.
So say more about that. What do you mean the Freedom Is Not Free bike? Is it a special design on the bike?
Actually it is. The builders, when they first decide to build the bike, they come up with a theme, and this bike's theme is the Freedom Is Not Free, and it's actually on the bike. It's painted into the bike. On the side it says Freedom Is Not Free, and it's got an American flag ghosted into the paint job.
Wow, sounds like a special bike. So you sold $50 tickets. How many tickets did you sell, and when will the winner be picked?
Well, basically what we do is we put a very low number on the total amount of tickets that can be sold. We limited our ticket sales to 300 so that the people buying the tickets have a much better chance of winning than, say, some of the big events that you go to where there's 5,000, 6,000 tickets. We only have 300, and each ticket costs $50. So there's out there somewhere, someone's going to buy a ticket and win a Harley Davidson for $50.
And there's no cost to you folks for the bike, so no, it's all profit in a sense.
Right, and what we do is we're going to take that money, and the majority of the money is going to be donated to the Veterans Place in Northfield, a veterans home that allows veterans that are, you know, homeless to come in. They can stay up to 2 years, get their medical taken care of, their education, their finances. It just basically gets them back on their feet. And we're going to donate a large portion of that money, right, to the Veterans Place. And then the rest of the money we'll use to support other veterans organizations and helping out individual veterans that run into problems with their bills and stuff.
So if I'm a veteran in Vermont and I like to ride motorcycles, how would I get involved in your organization?
Well, you can, we have a website, and they can go on the website and they can sign up there, or they can contact me. I'm the chapter commander, right? And feel free to give out my my contact information that you have, and we can get them set up. And it's not just veterans that have been in combat either. It's any veteran. We have different levels of the patches that we have that allow veterans that have not been in combat also be part of the group, because they're very important also.
So talk about that a little bit for those of us who maybe are not veterans or who don't have a veteran in our family. What kinds of veterans are there besides combat veterans?
Well, when we say combat veterans, that's a veteran that has actually been in combat, and it's in their records that they've been deployed into a combat area. And then we have veterans that are not combat veterans. They've never been deployed into a combat area, and those are your supporter veterans that, you know, they may not be stationed in an area where there is combat,
but they're still making sacrifices.
Took the words right out of my mouth, Anthony.
There you go.
And just reading a little bit of the background that I got from you, you can also be in your organization if you're a spouse or a family member of a veteran. Is that true?
Yes, we have an auxiliary also. Even my wife is part of the auxiliary, right? And they're also very important. And we don't look at it as they're important to this organization. They're important to the veterans, because when those veterans are deployed or those veterans are in the service and called away for duty, whether it's training, going into a combat area, those family members are behind us, backing us up.
Could I ask, I want to not switch gears, but go down a slightly different road. I mean, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you see as some of the biggest challenges facing vets coming back to Vermont, and I also wonder whether I don't know how old you are or you know what conflicts you were involved in, but I'm wondering whether there's a difference now because the Army is really all you know volunteer and National Guard folks, things like that, people who maybe didn't expect to see combat. I'm just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, like what the challenges are that you see.
Well, I was in the Desert Storm. So I got to see firsthand when I came back to the United States, right? The reception that we received. But one of our challenges now is finding those veterans that need help,
mm-hmm.
and you know that are in a situation where veterans typically do not want to stand up and say, "I need help." So sometimes we got to go out there and find them.
Yeah.
And it may be that they need help with getting information for the VA. We have multiple contacts in the VA system to where someone calls us and, you know, they're having problems. We can put them in contact with the right person.
And it just seems like, again, I'm not speaking from experience. I'm asking, but it seems like a lot of folks have been returning with, I don't know what I would call emotional problems. Again, I don't know if that's the best way to phrase it, but which maybe goes partly to what you were saying about how they don't really want to ask for help or have a hard time looking for help because they come back and they're proud of where they've been, but they have sort of some conflicted feelings going on that make it harder for them to reach out to people.
Yes, there's a lot of different things goes on with soldiers when they return. Even soldiers that have been in combat and that have suffered wounds, a lot of them have mental issues, PTSD, and it's for a veteran, it's hard to stand up and say, "I'd like help," because you always think of the person that needs it more than you.
Mm.
And I guess the training is to help other people, right? When you're being trained to be a soldier, you're being trained to put your own needs aside and help others.
Exactly, and that becomes embedded in who you are. And when you get out of the service, you don't tend to step forward and say, you know, "I need help with this." And like you said, with the emotional issues a lot of the soldiers have coming back, that's very hard for a soldier to stand up and say, you know, "I'm suffering from this," because it's not a a physical ailment or injury that people can see. And so it's very hard to stand up and say, you know, I'm having problems with this. And you'll find typically that veterans that are in a situation like this would prefer to talk to another veteran that understands what he's talking about. It's hard to explain to someone that's never been through it. And that's where we try and come in as much as possible so we can get them in contact with the right people.
So how do
we talk? Let me just remind listeners, we're talking to Don Edwards, who's a chapter commander of Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, a particular organization that, I guess, combines the love of motorcycles with the willingness or the need to help veterans who are returning home to Vermont.
So, and we should say that if you want to get in touch with the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, their website is vt2.combatvet.org. And Don has agreed to let his phone number be put out there, and that is 598-3157. So, Don, how do you find the veterans who need some kind of help? Do you all have outreach programs that you do, or is it with the motorcycles? How do you find those folks?
A lot of times they'll approach us. I mean, it's the same way that I came in contact with the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. Is I saw that patch with the skull on the back and it says Combat Veterans, and I was like, you know, curious as to what they were doing. You know, was this, because we are not a motorcycle club. And there's a big difference between an MC, a motorcycle club, and what we are. We are a nonprofit organization. Every dollar we raise goes to help veterans. Right? We use none of it for ourselves. It all goes to help veterans. And once they find out that, because a lot of them, you know, they've been through a lot, and they understand the whole prospecting for MCs, you know, if you want to go that way, but that's not what they're looking for, right? They're looking for other combat veterans, you know, and they learn about our organization, and we like to invite them in. We invite anybody to come in, right, and see our organization, see what we do.
I'm glad that you mentioned, I was going to ask you how you got involved, and it seems like for you, it just kind of happened, you know. I mean, you saw the emblem or you saw the group and decided to get involved, and you are clearly, you know, as the commander of this unit, this organization, you're clearly very much involved. And I ask this of a lot of people we talk to. I just wonder, like, why, I think I know the answer in this case, but I want to ask anyway. You know, there's a lot of different things you could be spending your time on, you know, everything from coaching Little League to, you know, working in your garden. I just wonder, you know, what it is about this that draws you to it, like why you choose to spend your time and put so much energy into this particular organization as opposed to all the other things you could be doing.
Well, it's part of being in the military. It's part of, you know, once we retire out of the service, you know, a lot of soldiers that leave the service after many, many years, they leave and it's like they've lost something. Mm. You've lost that camaraderie. Even when you go to work for other companies, it's not the same, because you know that you don't have to depend on that person. You don't have to put your life in that person's hands. Here, I know that every one of those person in the combat vets has my back. Every one of them will step up. If I call, they will be there, and it's the same way for me. If I get a phone call, right, whatever I'm doing, I will be there. And it's not just for the combat vets. That's for anybody. We talk to other motorcycle associations. You know, if you're ever in the area and you have problems with your bike or you need help, contact us. We will be there. And one of the things that I like to do as a commander is when I go out into the community, I look for those elderly World War II vets, the Korean War vets, the Vietnam War vets with their, you know, their hat, and they've got their hat and their, you know, the name of their ship on their hat, and they're very proud of it. And I like to approach them, and I like to thank them for their service, right? And also invite them to come visit us, even if they don't have a motorcycle.
Appreciate the answer.
Yeah, that was a really good answer, to think about that camaraderie that happens when you're serving, and then to come back, one of the things, you know, to miss that camaraderie, I guess, on top of whatever else is going on for you, that could be a really big deal.
It definitely can. And it seems like today, with the soldiers coming back, there is a lot of public interest in making sure that they get taken care of. But even with that interest, some still do fall through the cracks. And some don't even realize that they need the help.
So talk a little, just to go back to where we were before, talk a little bit about the veterans' place in Northfield and how that helps veterans.
Basically what they do is they have a home that's set up like dorms. They have their own rooms, right? And they live there full-time. Everything is paid for. It doesn't cost them anything to stay there. They do have requirements of being there. There's no alcohol, no drugs, right? They have to participate in the running of a home, whether it's maintenance, cooking. You know, they have to participate some ways with the home, and they have to have a plan. They have to progress. And a lot of them, one of the first things they do is, once they get established in their program, they start looking for a job.
Right.
You know, they work. And some of them need transportation to and from the VA. That's taken care of. If they have medical appointments, you know, they have transportation to and from. One of the things that our Combat Veterans Association does is every year we sponsor their Christmas party. And what we do is we set out change jars throughout the community, and in stores and convenience stores, and people drop their change in there. And then what we do, we gather all that up and we give them a good Christmas. And it just basically gets them off of the street, gives them the opportunity to get back on their feet, you know. It's a very successful program. Karen Boyce is the director down there. I don't have her information here in front of me for contact, but the Veterans Place Inc., I believe, right? And they are dedicated to these soldiers, getting them back on their feet, and they can range anywhere from, you know, 20-something years old to 70-something years old.
And we should mention again, just because we've had a far-ranging conversation, a part of what got us into this talk was the fact that you're donating this motorcycle. Well, you're raffling off this motorcycle and donating the money to Veterans Place, which we all really appreciate.
So, Don, thank you so much for joining us today. And I just want to mention again, if people want to find out more about the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, the website is vt2.combatvet.org, or you can call Don at 598-3157. Thanks so much for talking to us today, Don, and thanks for the work that you're doing and the raffle that you're running for the Veterans Place in Northfield.
Thanks a lot, Don. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for bringing this to highlight. It's a great organization.
That's because there's great people involved. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
You know, it is really true. I mean, it's just, I don't know what the word would be, but the fact that there's so many homeless vets, I was going to say it's like kind of weird in a way that we would ignore the needs of these people, you know, who do put their lives on the lines, whether you believe in a particular foreign policy or not. I mean, people come home, and there are a large percentage of vets who become homeless or suicidal or have a whole range of problems that put a lot of pressure. I mean, I can't imagine what these folks go through. It's just, you know, so difficult for me to not understand, but to imagine the kind of pressure they're under. He talks about somebody knowing somebody's got your back when you're in combat. I mean, unless you've been there, which obviously I haven't, I mean, it's just hard to imagine, but it's really amazing to me that we live in a country which has a foreign policy that's constantly sending people into battle. We live in a constant state of war. And yet when people come back from overseas, from combat, we sit by and watch them become homeless or suffer with emotional problems or, you know, even become suicidal. It's just really bad news.
Yeah, I think one thing that really struck me was, you know, the veterans go over and they're in combat. They have each other's back while they're there, and they're really working on that. And then they come here, and nobody has their back when they get back, even though they've made that ultimate sacrifice for whatever it is that we're fighting for. You know, they were willing to go over there and do that.
Well, I thought it was a good program. I appreciate all those folks who called and these folks who are involved in this. And I appreciate you being here, Amy. So I'm going to be away next week, maybe for a couple of weeks. Next week is a little bit of vacation time, but you and Jack will be here to take care of things.
That's right. We'll cover it for you, Anthony. I hope you have a great vacation.
Well, I hope you can take care of Jack. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us.
Views and opinions expressed on Equal Time do not necessarily represent those of WDEV or its management. And you are listening to 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, AM 550, WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier, and Survey the Kingdom on FM 101.9 from Island Pond. It's 2 o'clock.
AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire.